We're holding in the Yud Gimel Ikarim, the 13 foundations, 13 principles. We're holding by the second principle. So the Rambam is telling us that these are the foundations, these are the tenets of our Torah. And the Rambam breaks them down to 13. The second one is, Vayisod Hasheni, the second foundation, Achduto Yitala, is God's singularity. The who, and this concept is as follows. Sheze ilat hakol echad. The one who is above all, the one who is the cause for all, he is singular, he is one. Lo ke'achdut hamin ve'lo ke'achdut hasug. Not singular like a certain species is singular. Let's say humans are singular, Homo sapiens. That's true. But it's a species which is singular. You could say that there is a singular type of ice cream, but there are many of that singular. V'lo k'davar ha'echad ha'murkav shuhu mitchalek la'achadim rabim. And not like a singular item which is composed of many components, which are all singular. God is not that. ולא אחד כגוף הפשוט, שהוא אחד במספר, אבל מקבל החלוקה והפיצול עד בלי סוף. And not singular like a physical being which is singular. If we say something physical is singular, so then we mean it's a singular, it's true. There's only one me in the world, as far as I know, no other me. I'm pretty singular. Not the fact that the human race is singular, my being human, but me or you or any individual, but that individual can be divided limitless times. Elohu Yitala, God, who is above all, is singular. Echad, achdut she'en achdut kamoa b'shum panim. He is singular in a singular fashion that there's nothing like it in any other thing. You'll never find something with that singularity, like God. But now, let's just finish the point. וזה היסוד השני מורה עליו מה שנאמר, שמע ישראל, השם אלוקינו, השם אחד. And this, the second foundation, the verse, שמע ישראל, hear, O Israel, השם אלוקינו, השם who is our God, השם אחד, השם is one, this pasuk points to this tenet of Jewish belief. Yeah.
Now I learned once about it in English, and it says like unique in his uniqueness. So it said like, you know, if you imagine like uniqueness, it is, you know, actually you have like a category where someone or something could be unique, but there is not even like a, he's so unique that there's not even a category to his uniqueness, you know?
So let's begin this discussion with Shema Yisrael. Every morning, we have part of our prayer is we say Shema. Now, that's biblically oriented. The Torah commands us, V'dibar tabam, v'shach b'chov kumecha. One should say these words, the words of Shema, when he goes to sleep, when he wakes up. We have a mitzvah to say Shema in the morning and a mitzvah to say Shema at night. Our sages broke it down and they gave reasons. They said that when we say Shema, we are accepting all Malchut Shamayim. We're accepting the yoke of God. And they broke it down some more. And they said that when one is saying the first verse, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then we add on, Baruch Shem Kod Malchuto Leolam Ve'ed, he must have full focus. He can't be walking, he can't be carrying something. He has to stand in one place and focus on that pasuk. After that, we're more lenient. Could be carrying something. After that, we're more lenient. The amount of focus that we expect from an individual when he reads Shema, the minimum focus, obviously, ideally, when we say Shema, we should be sitting in one place and focused and reading the Shema. But nonetheless, our sages broke it down that the minimum focus that a person is supposed to have in Shema, on the first verse, Shema Yisrael, one has to have the maximum focus. And as we go on, so less is required of us. The minimum goes down, the threshold. So the main point our sages broke it down to is that verse, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. God is one. What's... The Rambam is stressing the point that God's oneness is different than anything else. It's not oneness of a species, right? God is singular, and it's not a singular species. And it's not the oneness of something physical. We could expand this to many points. Something physical is unique in its separation from other physical things. God's uniqueness isn't contingent on its being separate. And we recognize that this is being separate. This is being separate because it's enclosed in its own area. You recognize that's what this is. But God's oneness has nothing to do with physical. But there's more to it, philosophically. Our sages instituted, before saying Shema, we have blessings. And those blessings revolve around Shema. There's a reason why they're there. So what's the first blessing that precedes Shema? We say, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Yotzer Or, God who gives fashion to light, Uvore Choshech and creates darkness, Oseh Shalom, makes peace, Uvore Et HaKol, and He creates everything. With me till here? Right? That's the blessing, that's the first blessing that precedes Shema in those series. What's the idea of that blessing? So the Gemara reveals to us that when the sages instituted that blessing, they had in mind the verses from Isaiah, from Yeshaya. Isaiah is speaking to the Jews who have been influenced by the Persians. We have Jews who are during the period between the first and second temple. They're under the Persian Empire, right? The Babylonians overtook the Jewish people and destroyed the first temple. And then the Babylonian Empire was overtaken by the Persian Empire. Now, the Persians and the Medes, who ran the Persian Empire, they had a form of religion called Zoroastrianism, which believed that there have to be two powers in the world. Meaning they were plagued by the eternal question, how could God create something which is bad? How could God who is giving take away? How could God who gives light make darkness? Meaning if God is a giving God, He wants to constantly impart and give, so then how come we have in this world things that lack and things that are taken away? So they said it can't be that the same God that allows a person to give birth, to have life, is the God that takes away, that gives death. If God is constantly giving, so then He's giving. If He's taking, He's taking. But to have God do both, that didn't work for them. So they developed a religion which believed that there were two forces in the world. There are two gods. There's a force of giving, there's a force of light, and there's a force of taking away, force of darkness. And they served these two forces. There were months where they would serve the force of light, and there were months where they would serve the force of darkness. And in their temples, only they were allowed to light candles. That's why we have in the Mishnayot discussions in the Gemara about when can you and can't you light your Shabbos candles, and when can you and can't you light the Hanukkah candles outside, because they would have, from the church, they would send around watchmen checking, is anyone daring to light a candle outside the church? Because they were honoring their God by lighting candles only in their church. And they'd forbid people to light outside the church. But their philosophy was that there are two forces in the world. And it's impossible, they said, that God could both give and take. Now the truth is that that's an eternal question. How come God, who in Judaism we know is all giving and good, how come then in this world there is taking? There is things that we would consider bad. People do die. God gives life, but God also gives death. But what Isaiah is coming to tell the people is Hashem is Yotzer Or, he creates the light. Uvorei Choshech, he also creates the darkness. Ose Shalom, he makes peace. Uvorei Ra, he also creates things that are bad. God is the one that makes everything, and it's one God. And following suit after Isaiah's verses, which stress this point, our sages instituted that the blessing that precedes Kriya Shema, where Kriya Shema, again, we said the main stress is that verse, God is one. So he is the one who is both giving and taking, making peace, doing things that we would seem are contradictory to peace. There's only one God. And that's why they instituted this blessing preceding Kriya Shema, what we say in every morning. You guys with me? If you think about it, that's really part of what we're saying in the blessing, Shakol Niyam Bidvaro. What does Shakol Niyam Bidvaro mean? So you could view it about every item, every physical item, every food. Shakol, everything, Niyah came to being, Bidvaro, with his words, with God's command. But you could also view it that it applies to everything that happens. I always, when things are going bad, if I happen to make a shakol, I always get encouraged. Because I'm reminded, hey, even what's happening now, shakol niyam bidvaro. Everything has come to be because he did it. I could tell you some, there were dates that's the only thing that helped me. Like I was wiped out. Things were going really bad. And suddenly I made a shakol. I said, hey, okay, God's right here. So the Rambam over here is stressing a few points. He's stressing God's singularity, which we could understand is being stressed in contrast with all the other religions that stress duality, either the idol worshippers or Christianity or Zoroastrianism. The prevalent religions at the time, I don't know how the Rambam would treat Islam, but it doesn't seem like the Rambam treats them as people who serve more than one God. And there are places where the Rambam speaks about them, and it seems like his approach is that they do believe in one God. So the Rambam is stressing God's singularity, and this is important not only in contrast with other religions, but also to understand what we believe in. What did the Hashem tell us in Parshas Vayeschanan? Hashem says, I did all the miracles and I took you out of Mitzrayim. Ata oreta, you were shown ladat, so that you would know. You would know, not just believe. Ki Hashem hu Elokim, that Hashem is the one who has all the forces, all the powers are under Hashem. Ein od milvado, there are none other than Hashem. And there's another place where God says we are supposed to know that He's the only one. And Rashi explains that God opened up the world at the time that the Torah was given. God allowed the Jews to see the world, whatever that means. They were able to see from edge to edge throughout all the skies. They were able to see everything. And they saw that there were none other than Hashem. So does it mean physically they saw that? Or does it mean on a spiritual level they were able to connect with the concept of Hashem's singularity so much that they recognized that this is true? Probably the latter. This concept has eternal depth. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, Moshe, he's the top prophet. So Moshe Rabbeinu he knows who he's speaking to more than anyone else, right? Moshe is the top prophet that ever was. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hareini na et kvodecha, God, please reveal to me your honor, ve'ida'acha, and I will know you. And the Rambam explains in other places, what did Moshe Rabbeinu want when he asked God to reveal his holiness? He said, I want to know you on a level that I'll understand and I'll be fully cognizant of your singularity, just as one who knows a friend closely. Ve'edacha, the term yediyah in Tanakh, means not only knowledge, but it also means closeness. When Adam gets together with his wife Eve, it says, Vayeda Adam et chava ishto. Adam knew his wife Eve. There's an element of closeness of knowing one another. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking for. So we see that even Moshe Rabbeinu, who had, God is saying, he spoke to Moshe panim el panim, face to face, just as one would speak to his friend, still had an element where he said, God, I want to have a better understanding of this principle, of your singularity. So we're touching on it today, but we have to recognize that the more we learn, there's more and more depth to this concept. Any questions? Okay. we'll do the third principle today also. Vayisod HaShlishi, the third foundation, Shlilat HaGashmut Mimenu. Understanding that God has nothing physical about Him. Nothing, we'll call it physical. Vehu, and this concept is the following. Shezeh HaEchad Eino Guf Velo Koach Meguf. That this singular being that we call God is not a physical being. It's not a body, a person, or any other physical being. Velo koach beguf, nor is it a force within physical beings. Meaning we're accustomed to everything being physical. We know that there are physical objects, and we know that there are forces that apply to physical things. There's the force of gravity, we could see fire. We're limited to the scope that we see in this world. We don't know of anything else. We know there's matter and energy. The Rambam is saying God is not matter and God is not energy. God may do things that have to do with matter and energy, but God in himself, in essence, has no matter and has no energy. He is not matter and he is not energy. V'lo yarum hora'ot ha'gufim, and the things that happen to matter, to physical things, don't happen to God. Kigon ha'tnua v'amnucha, for example, motion and being static, that you can't use those terms with regard to God. Lo be'etzem v'lo b'mikre. They don't occur regarding God, both because in a true sense, the way God is, these things don't affect Him, they don't apply to Him. And also in a passing sense, and sometimes you say, this cup is affected by gravity. That happens to be the state that the cup is in. These things don't occur to God, not in the deep understanding of who God is and not in the happenings of how God is. ולפיכך שללו ממנו עליהם השלום, החיבור והפירוד. And therefore, our sages stressed that God does not have what we would call attachment and separation, and second we'll explain. ואמרו, לא ישיבה ולא עמידה, לא עורף ולא איפוי. Our sages said that even though we have verses that describe God as sitting, God as standing, God is tired, God is vibrant, God's front, God's back, right? We have midrashim that way. Moshe Rabbeinu was up in heaven. He said, God, reveal me your honor. What did God show him? God said, I could show you my back. I can't show you my front. So our sages say, you saw the back of God's neck, so to speak, with the tefillin. God has a neck? No, God doesn't have a neck. God is sitting in judgment. God sits, God doesn't sit. God has tefillin, some level. God has tefillin, whatever that means. Yeah.
Let's say when it is said, you know, that God is, let's say he's not like energy and matter, and let's say this is just what applies to physical things.
This is just?
Just what applies to physical things. So let's say actually it would affirm this theory, which is very anti-religious, you know, that there are scientists or whatever that say, you know, if there is a God, so in the beginning he gave a cause, made up like natural laws and just let it run let things run on himself without interfering.
What's the connection? Why do you have to say that?
Because I think, let's say, because then it's like that there are like physical laws and stuff, you know, that would just apply to the world, and it's as if, let's say, God would leave the world kilo alone, you know?
Well, we could say that God created the world with certain laws of nature that we're accustomed to. And God is still here. Why do we have to preclude God's being present when we say God gave the world laws of nature?
Because I think also a principle is to see, let's say, when you say, let's say, things are created by God, so it is like God, or God is in it in a way, you know? So if he's not, maybe he's like in the physical and in the things above physical, you know, so.
The fact that God himself is not physical or energy doesn't mean that God can't deal or create or affect what is physical and have energy. We're just defining what God is, not what God does.
So what is then a statement like, you know, like everyone is a part of God, you know? Like, or like everything is like a part of God, let's say whatever is created. So being a part of it is not like somehow...
Everyone is a part of God. I don't know who says that everyone is a part of God. You're asking me to justify a sentence which I don't know who said,
okay,
in what
so
context.
I have to check. I have to figure out the context myself. But I heard that once from a few people. So
yeah, I understand that way. Like, from what I learned, that like everything is being kept going from God.
So that we saw in the first foundation.
Like that, our souls are.
Being a part of and being sustained by are two different things. The fact that God is sustaining the world, that's what we saw in the first foundation. That if we would, for a second, think that God wasn't here, let's say, like the Greeks believed. They believed there were gods and that the gods died and stuff like that. So if we would, for a second, entertain the thought that God would die, then the world wouldn't continue being here. The Rambam made that point, that God does maintain the world's presence. That God is the one that sustains the world. We discussed the concept that we usually try to fit God into our physical terms. God is in this room. God is within. We try to put him into the box that is our perception of things. And the Tanakh teaches us the other way around, that we're all in God's presence. God sustains the world. It's not that there is space and God is in that space, but God preceded the concept of space, and all space is within, so to speak, God's space. Meaning that there was God, and whatever that means, there was nothing else, and God made room for the world, and God sustains the world. But to say that God is here, so there is an aspect where we say God is everywhere. But again, being that God is not to be viewed with physical terms, so then God is not limited to physical space. It's not a question of God being here or as opposed to here, because we're not talking about something physical. Something physical takes physical space. It's like saying the concept of 1 + 1 = 2 is here. It's not anywhere. Now God is something that exists. It's not just a concept. I'm just saying, just like concepts don't take physical space, so too God doesn't take physical space. Yeah? So it's not that 1 + 1 = 2 is more on this page than over here than anywhere else. It's something that doesn't take up space. God does not fit into physical terms. God doesn't take up space. Now that doesn't mean that he can't affect the physical. The concept of 1 + 1 = 2 doesn't affect anything. It's a truth. God is true, he's the source of truth, he's the creator of the world, and he's the one that maintains the world. But just like the concept of 1 + 1 = 2 doesn't take up space, it's not something physical, so too God is. Even though God does affect the physical, created the physical. Yeah? So we have to discern between what God affects and what God creates and what God is. And now we're discussing what God is. And because we have many psukim that discuss God in physical terms, so the Rambam is stressing that God is not physical.
I have a question.
Sure.
Would you say that God is so big that he's pretty much everywhere? And as far as what we understand, he's everywhere?
I think so.
And as far as the like during the tabernacle times and temple times, when he really brought his presence down in a special way, was that just, despite him being everywhere, he just kind of in a special way brought an extra special Shekinah presence, or what do you,
yeah,
what do you
yeah.
think?
So we say that there are places where God reveals Himself more, and places where God reveals Himself less. And just like Hashem says, pray by the Bet HaMikdash, that's where the Shekhinah is. God is everywhere. Yeah, but God reveals Himself more in certain places. We say that a Jew who's outside of the land of Israel is like a Jew who has no God. What do you mean? God is in Chutz La'aretz also. Yes, but God's revelation is going to be less. And so to speak, our connection with God has more barriers. But that doesn't mean God isn't there. Wherever you go, God is. Because God is not limited to space. So He's everywhere. Is there anywhere that 1 plus 1 isn't 2? As far as we know, that's everywhere. So again, I don't mean to lower God to the level of being a concept like 1 plus 1 being 2. I'm just saying that's a good way of thinking of it. Just like that concept is true wherever you'll be, so to God, God's presence is wherever you'll be. So we say that God has lo pirud, not separation, vehu orif, and that's what we mean by saying He doesn't have a back, because in order to have a back, He has to have a front. You have to separate. There's you're limiting God to physical form. Velo chibur, ki ifui min ve'afu bechtav pelishtin, klomar, yidchafum bekatef litchabram bahem. God doesn't have attachment, just as the verse describes how people get together, they try to unite with things. So God, being that He has no physical form, He doesn't attach with things in a physical sense. V'amar ha-Navi, and the prophet says, V'elmi t'damiyun el, to whom can you compare God? Uma demut ta'alchu lo, and what shape, what form can you set up and say that this is God's form? Doesn't exist. V'el mi tedamyuni v'eshve, God says, and to who could you compare me and I will be equal to? Amar, etc. De'ilu haya guf ki az haya dome legufot. If God had physical form, so then there would be aspects where He would be similar to other physical forms. You could say being composed of atoms. You could say color, shape, size. So the second you enter that realm, so there are going to be similarities. There are going to be differences, but there are similarities. The Midrash says, we say, God roared like a lion. God's great voice like the great waves come crashing down. So our sages say, it's funny. The waves couldn't even be compared to God, because they're so distant from God's awesome power and God's awesome voice. But we say God's voice is like the waves. So you're comparing the greater by the lesser, and the lesser is so less than the greater that you couldn't even compare it to the greater. Let's expand on that. It's like saying, I am how much bigger than Adam? A billion times? I don't know. And one Adam. So, I don't know, it's probably a billion squared or whatever. So if we would say that you have one Adam over here of sugar, and you'd say about a person who's a billion times that Adam, he's as sweet as that little piece of sugar. So that's funny. Sugar can't even be compared to him. I mean, talking about he's a billion times that. We're saying God's voice is like crashing waves. The waves they don't come close to even be compared to God. And yet we put God down and we compare Him to waves, to crashing waves. Why? Because our greatest concept of the loud noise is things that come crashing down, like tremendous waves. So we compare God to something which is really incomparable to God. If you'd want to say how great the waves were, you couldn't begin it to say that the waves make noise like God. They're so distant. But we say God is like the waves, and really we're just using a term so that we could understand it. So That's what the Rambam over here is saying. You can't compare God to anything physical if you'd compare him. So the second he has certain physical aspects, he automatically has similarities with certain physical beings. And all that we find in the different Sfarim that describe God as having different physical attributes, kigon ha'alicha ve'amida ve'yeshiva ve'adibur. For example, we describe God as walking, standing, right? In Bereishis, it says God was walking through Gan Eden. God was standing, God sitting, God speaks, v'chayotze b'zeh hem kulam derech hashala. These are borrowed terms. God's speech is not like our speech. We think that a prophet, God speaks to him. It's not that he hears it with his ears. He hears it with his neshama. So we discussed this once. So all the terms that we, all the physical terms that we apply to God are borrowed terms. As our sages often use this concept, the Torah speaks like mankind speaks. The Torah sometimes speaks in terms that we could understand. There's been a lot said on this matter. And this third principle, this third foundation, the verse in the Torah that points to it, is that which it says, God describes that when he revealed himself at Sinai, "Ki lo ra'item kol tmuna," for you didn't see any picture, any, you didn't see any physical form, "klomar lo hisagtem oto ba'al tmuna," you didn't perceive God as being one who could fit in a picture. Anything physical you could take a picture of, you could fit it into a picture. Something that isn't physical you can't fit into a picture. When God says regarding Mount Sinai, you didn't see any picture, what God is saying, you didn't see anything that you could draw or put into a picture, into physical terms. Klomar, lo yisagtem oto ba'al tmuna, lefi shehu, kmo she'amanu, lo guf ve'lo koach baguf. Because God is neither a physical being, God isn't composed of matter, nor is he composed of energy that applies to matter. Any questions?